is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Welcome, dear listeners, to New Dimensions Radio. Today, we explore the profound wisdom and transformative power of Aikido, a modern martial art that offers far more than just physical techniques. It can be applied to real-life situations, from resolving workplace conflicts to facing our deepest fears. Understanding the principles of Aikido, whether or not you physically take up the practice, can help cultivate a strong center and support balance as we move through the strong winds of change. Joining us is Susan Perry, PhD and 6-degree black belt, who has practiced Aikido for nearly 50 years. Susan is not only a martial artist, but also a philosopher, author, artist, and teacher, who has dedicated her life to understanding and sharing the deepest principles of Aikido. Susan is the founder of Aikido Today magazine and the author of The Hidden Power of Aikido. Join us for the next hour as we delve into how the principles of Aikido can help us cultivate a beginner's mind, embrace change, and ultimately support us to live a more joyful and engaging life. I'm your host, Travis Glenn Sabera. Welcome to New Dimensions. And a warm welcome to you, Susan.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to spending this time delving into Aikido, but I'm wondering if you can help our listeners understand a bit of what your journey was in discovering Aikido and deciding to commit yourself to this life path.
Well, it started in a curious way. My late husband and I wanted to quit smoking. We were active people. We were running 5 miles when we went out to exercise, and we couldn't get past that, not because of a lack of muscular strength, but it was our wind. And it was the 70s in Southern California, the smoggiest time in its history, and we were smoking cigarettes down to the running track, strangely enough. And so we decided we should do something about that. And quitting smoking, we did it cold turkey. We did it at the end of the year, gathered up everything from pockets and so forth, threw it into the fireplace on New Year's Eve, and stepped up in the new year to quit smoking and make ourselves healthier so we could breathe. And my husband knew, actually. He was the smart one, I think. And he said, we have to change our habits. We have to do something entirely different because we were both long-term smokers, and smoking kind of punctuates your day, holds it together with a smoke. And so we started Aikido. That was very different for us. I had no idea what it was, but my husband said, come and try it with me. And so I said, okay. I was a graduate student at the time, and I had plenty of conflicts there, just struggling with my studies, but also, it was difficulty being a woman in that world. It wasn't a women's world yet. I was also ombudsman of the Claremont Colleges, which was a problem-solving post for 2 years, and I had plenty of conflicts coming up through that job. So anyway, we started Aikido, and we met with all the same things that beginners usually meet with, you know, tight bodies, difficulty stretching out, a completely new outlook of the world, new terminology, movements that were difficult to make in the right way, all of that stuff. But it was something that piqued our interest, and so we continued. There were glimpses of a philosophy that underlied it, so that seemed reasonable to us. And so for the first 2 or 3 years, we were learning the basics and practicing sincerely and finding that it was helpful in our daily lives.
It seems like such a special moment to share that as a romantic couple, both quitting the smoking together, committing, resolving, and doing it, and then also finding this other practice together to share together and do that. And I'm wondering, was there some way that maybe one of you was more interested than the other or not, and inspiring with that?
I think that we were both fully committed. We both really liked it. Ron was a philosopher too. So we were a very tight couple, close companions, and we did everything together. He was active in writing articles and teaching, and I was doing the same. And so we were always talking about things that were important to us. And then Aikido was just another additional thing.
And I'm wondering, with this background that both of you shared in philosophy, and it comes up time and again in your book, which I'm so glad about, the philosophical underpinnings of Aikido. And I'm wondering, you just mentioned a bit about the beginners, the stretching, getting the form right and struggling with that. So I'm wondering, what point did the philosophy and the spirit of Aikido begin to become part of your practice versus just the technique in the beginning?
The techniques do really kind of overpower and take a beginner's attention right away, because you have to learn where to put your foot and how to move. You're working with partners usually that come at you with a punch or a strike or something. And so, you know, your attention is clearly there. But beginner's mind, I guess, would be to understand what beginner's mind is about was our first dive into a philosophical side of Aikido. And it's a very difficult thing to do, because as philosophers, we were just filled with ideas and opinions and so forth. And our poor teacher wouldn't want to be the teacher of us. You know, we were sort of rebellious intellectuals at the time. And in Western philosophy, which is very driven by critical analysis and so forth. So that's kind of what we brought to the class. But it was quickly clear that, it was a different approach that was needed, and that involved beginner's mind, which meant emptying your mind and allowing room for some new ideas to come in. And that is actually why we started that class. And so we wanted to do that once we realized that this other approach was a little bit in our way.
And how did you find your way ultimately to the senior leaders and teachers of Aikido that could satisfy not only the technique, but the intellectual and spiritual curiosity that you had also?
I just kept asking questions. I kept asking questions, and this seems to be the vehicle of my life. I ask questions, and then people direct me to somebody else because they can't answer them. And so that's what got me into philosophy to begin with, and kind of sniffing out a few philosophical ideas there in Aikido, I wanted to know more, and I met more and more people. And first I learned about the sort of political situation of Aikido in this country. And that was a stumbling block, because it was arranged as a kind of feudal system, even though it was here in the United States. And so there were barriers to getting to talk to someone else, because they would be from a different organization and organizations didn't connect in a friendly way. They were viewed as competitive, and it just seemed ridiculous because it's an art of non. And there's no competitions in Aikido, which is something that appealed to Lon and me. So why would there be this kind of element in the structure? I really was not interested in Japanese culture. I didn't know anything about Japanese philosophy. Philosophy departments in the U.S. during that time, you know, the core courses did not involve any Asian philosophy. And there were classes in certain places and you could take them, but they weren't viewed as important. Maybe World's Greatest Religions would be a class that would be offered at a department, but there was very little offered that way. And I didn't want to become involved in a religion. There were a lot of religions and gurus and a lot of scams going on during that time, just in the world in general. And I was trying to be careful not to fall prey to something like that. So what it did get me into was starting a magazine. That's what made me start a magazine, because it seemed to me that the whole thing should be open to everyone who wanted to practice, and that all of these high-ranking sensei that were coming to the United States from Japan and stopping through either Los Angeles or San Francisco, both within reach for me since I live on the outskirts of Los Angeles, I could interview them.
We're getting into the accumulation of your knowledge here. It's fantastic. But I'm wondering again, if we could go unpack a little bit about what you said about Aikido really is about not competition, in contrast to what you were experiencing. Maybe just the principle of Aiki, if we could just flesh that out for our listeners a little bit.
Right. It's really the two of the most important characters of the name of the art, Aikido. And I was just reading something that said that I in Japanese language is usually involved in a compound of some sort, but that doesn't matter here. When I went to Japan, finally, I was beginning to study the characters, and I found the eye on locksmith signs. And I thought that was really interesting. Yeah, because, you know, if you think of a lock and a key, then it's something that's got to fit in order to work together, right? And by themselves, they aren't too useful, I suppose, at least as their intended function. So I is just that. Maybe appropriateness is kind of a modern translation in Aikido circles, or harmony is what I was told, first of all, harmony. And ki is the energy, of course. You know, people know about qi from Tai Chi and Qigong and things like that. That's Chinese, but the Japanese pronunciation of the same character is ki. And you know, probably the character involves the ideogram of cooked rice, cooking rice, and the steam coming up and the vapors. And I, all of that just really grabbed me. I liked it because it made me understand something a little deeper. So appropriate energy or harmonious energy, Aiki, you know, coming together.
I'm speaking with Susan Perry, author of The Hidden Power of Aikido. If you want to learn more about her work, you can go to susanperry.info, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with Susan Perry, and we were just discussing some of the linguistic and philosophical deep roots of the practice of Aikido. And so please continue to walk us through the I and the Ki.
I and Ki, yes. Aiki atmosphere is really, an Aiki atmosphere is really wonderful. And what that means is that you have a kind of atmosphere that where everything fits in together and there's no opposition or conflicts going on. And so this is the mental state that an Aikido student really wants to embrace. That is part of having beginner's mind, or a mind that's not cluttered with conflicts and hostilities or plans about the future or the past, but just being in the now, in the here and now, and being willing and able to receive something new. And so Do, the last character in Aikido, is really big too. It's the way with the capital W. And so most arts have this as the end of their name: karate do, judo, cha do, tea ceremony, and so forth. They all have do as the end there, because, and again, looking at the kanji, the character, you can see a man with a big hat walking on a path. And that is what you do when you study Aikido seriously. It's not just for picking up a couple of self-defense techniques, although you could do that. But more serious students that will stay in the art for many, many years find themselves on a path, and they don't want to fall off the path. They want to stay on the path. And the path is to continue to have beginner's mind and continue to be able to find a way of using the Aiki attitude in more and more daily life experiences.
Susan, I'm so thankful that you put this offering of your book into the world, because this is a part that you talk about what distinguishes Aikido being a path, the do, from just techniques. And so you're not only your interest, but your capacity to include all of this in the book, from mere technique to life practice, is such a gift for the readers. And I'm just wondering, what personally transformed in you as you were integrating Aikido into the way you view life, into the way you interact with others? And so your own movement from technique to path.
Right. Well, I got a lot of personal stories in the book that you're referring to, and it came kind of slowly along the way. One thing that I think was pivotal was when I finally realized that Aikido had a philosophy and that it wasn't a religion. There was a lot of conflicting views going on. You know, I started around 1977, and the founder had passed away in 1969. So there was beginning to be Aikido over here in the United States, especially in big cities on the coasts. And the family, the founder's family, the Ueshibas, were really responsible for that, sending teachers out into different countries to teach Aikido and get it to be known across the world, which they succeeded at doing. It's all over the world now. I didn't want to have any part of religion. I was a philosophy, serious philosophy student, and I didn't view myself as entering into dogma, you know, so things had to be, like Aristotle says, logical and follow from one another and make sense and so forth and so on. And I was searching to find the person that could answer my questions. And I ultimately did go to Japan to find these answers. And the funny thing is, they came via a Shinto priest. He was the son of the priest before him, of course. And that priest had been Osensei's friend, and he visited him every year.
If you wouldn't mind, just take a bit moment and tell us who Osensei is with a little more depth.
Okay. O-sensei is the founder of Aikido. His name is Morihei Ueshiba. O-sensei is, means great teacher, and it's applied really only to him. I think maybe there's a few others in the martial arts world, but us Aikidoists, you know, reserve that term just for him. And he was, he was quite a guy, and he was a very a different Japanese man. He took the traditions of Japan very seriously. So after World War II, when the Western forces were occupying Tokyo, say, then everybody was wearing pants and, you know, Western dress, but he insisted on keeping, you know, his kimonos and heoris and things like that, traditional Japanese garments. And also he used in class a lot of the stories from the Kojiki, which is the oldest book of Japan, book on a par with, Odysseus or the Iliad, you know, books of mythologies about the beginnings of the universe. And so this is a religion in Japan. It's called Shinto. And so I think this is where a lot of people got the idea that he was, and he was religious, but that you had to be careful because it looked like he was teaching religion, which is not at all the case. He was using, my understanding is that he was using these well-known stories to make deeper philosophical points.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way he could communicate with his students.
There is a moment that in the book you write about misogi, that O-sensei himself believed that Aikido itself was a purification. You talk about specific waterfall misogi as part of that.
Misogi, yes. Misogi is a little harder practice. It's more difficult in that it sort of pushes you past your barriers. And waterfall misogi is one. I'm currently doing a writing misogi. I started last October 22nd, and I took up this practice of writing something short and positive at the beginning of my day for a year. And I'm almost back there to October 22nd. So it's a commitment. You know, it isn't that it's such a hard task to do because I enjoy writing, but to get up and do it every day, even when you don't feel like it, even when you have a busy day, even when you want to listen to the news first, but to make sure that I do this first, you know, it's just been a little bit of a push. And waterfall misogi is the same way.
And just to clarify for our listeners a little bit, misogi, as far as I understand it, means purification. So some kind of cleansing act. And you're taking this as a writing practice. It can be a physical discipline. There's many different ways. And I'm wondering if there's something that our listeners can maybe think about or do for a misogi of their own, if they're interested.
Well, of course, they could do something if they took up a practice of, you know, if they like to cook or something and that they want to expand their cooking repertoire, maybe they could try a new recipe every week for a year. That will get old after the first, you know, few months.
Exactly.
But the misogi means that you finish the year. O-sensei viewed Aikido as a misogi.
Okay.
So how does that purify you? Well, you know, we have all of our habits and favorite viewpoints that make us comfortable in the way we conduct ourselves in the world. And so a misogi sort of brings you to something new that you have to try out for a certain amount of time. And so it pushes out all of the barriers inside you. I used to go under the waterfall every Wednesday. My husband died of cancer. And so there was 7 or 8 years of caregiving that I was involved with. And I would get very frustrated and sad and all the things that a person would suspect. But I had a cabin on the mountain, and there's a waterfall nearby. And every Wednesday, I'd take my dog and go stand under the waterfall. And what the waterfall did for me, I mean, it was cold water coming down, it was the longest fall on the mountain, so it's kind of heavy coming down on your shoulders, and so people typically jump out with a shriek. But the practice is to stay and let the water come and pound on your shoulders and to go to your center. And there, in Japan, I did some waterfall misogi. There's actual chants and things. So to keep your center and keep control. And what happens is that all of the difficult parts in you, all of the frustrations and the anger and the fears and all of that, it just gets thrown out. And so joy comes. And so you can experience that joy and you feel stronger, and kind of the avenues or the streams inside you get flushed out. So they're all working pretty well after that. And that's what misogi is about. And that's how it's a purification.
I can feel the joy as you're talking about it, even as I'm also shuddering from the thought of being under the cold water.
A lot of people don't like that. Well, yeah. So, you know, cold water misogi is just one kind. Like I said, Osensei created this art from quite a wide variety of martial arts experiences he had. And as a misogi for people, so that moving around and working their bodies, they could release their frustrations and fears. You know, we all have those coming into us. Day driving on the freeway, you know, people take your right of way, or you see somebody, you know, do something stupid and nearly take your life, or, you know, just sitting there gives you a backache or whatever. It's hard to go through a day without building up some kind of inner tensions and problems that might affect your mood. And so Aikido practice releases those things. Yeah.
There's even a story in the book about, I think, your husband getting cut off in traffic and how he worked with that from a place of center rather than reactivity.
Well, at first, it does take a bit of work to keep your center during these frustrating times.
In today's traffic, that's so true.
But, you know, because of the Do, remember that Do character we discussed just a moment or two ago about the path? So the path is the path of being centered. And so what you want to do is do that enough times, just like doing a technique enough times smooths out the rough parts. So addressing the world in this way starts smoothing things out so you can always be at your center.
I'm speaking with Susan Perry, author of The Hidden Power of Aikido. If you want to learn more about her work, please go to susanperry.info. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
We're talking with Susan Perry today about the hidden power of Aikido. And we've talked a bit about how Aikido can help find your center on the mat, per se, and understanding your energy. But one of my favorite stories in the book